Okay, so in this week's e-bulletin, I put out a little teaser, didn't I, about tonight, to come along and hear an amazing story of how God has been speaking to a family in our church and taking them on a journey which you are all part of, even though you may not have realized it up until this point, and are going to continue to be part of. It is an amazing story, and it's not finished yet. So I'm going to invite Tim and Anise to now come and share with us. Thanks, guys.
Yay!
Yay!
I will give the kind of headlines, and then we'll explain the story, okay? Both me and Anise feel that we have had a calling on our lives. And that calling is to move to Camden, or the borough of Camden in London, and particularly to move to Rev Church, which is led by Steph Liston. That is the headline. We will now fill in the story. Oh, it's you going first, isn't it?
So we've got quite a little story to tell you. So if you're all good for about 25 minutes or so, we'll try and rattle through how God's been speaking to us over the last year and a half. So about a year and a half ago, I went to our Relational Mission Church Planting Conference in the Netherlands. So part of my job is to do that, to run events for Relational Mission, so I was there to work. But on the way back, I was stuck next to Maurice Nightingale on the ferry for 7 hours. Maurice, for those of you who don't know, used to lead our church here and is now responsible for looking after church planting within Relational Mission. And so Maurice started asking me some really irritating questions, like, what are you doing with your life, Anise, and stuff like that. And until someone really asks you that, you don't really think about it too much. And so he said to me, where do you see yourself in 10 years' time? Will you still be in Aylsham? And I just found myself thinking, no, I don't think we will be. But I surprised myself with that answer. So then he was saying, well, what about in 5 years' time? And then I was like, well, no, hang on a minute. Let's not go silly. And so he started saying to me, so when would be your first opportunity to move in terms of, like, your children's education, you know, their gaps in there when they move up to schools and stuff like that? When would be the first opportunity you'd have to move? And so I said, well, 2018. That's when Eli would start high school and when Jemima would start junior school, and it wouldn't matter for Esther because she wouldn't have started her GCSEs at that point. But we kind of joked. I was like, oh, you know, but we're not moving, so let's not talk about it anymore. And he said that he kind of used this analogy of a green light and a red light and how most of us operate on a red light system where we kind of are stationary at the red light until we get the green light to go, and then we move forward. And he was saying he kind of tends to think that it's better to operate on a green light basis, so where you're continuing to move forward until you get the red light. And it's just a little bit of a different perspective on how you approach things. Now, also at this time, it was quite a difficult time for us in our family. We were going through quite a dark patch, and everything felt very, very difficult. Really, really hard. And Maurice just said to me then, you and Tim need to start dreaming some dreams together, and that will lift you. So we agreed that if ever it became a thing we needed to talk about, that, you know, we'd get back in touch with him. And I think God really did something in me that day, and just started, I suppose, to perhaps reignite some things that I'd lost for quite a long time, just a passion to church plant. And so I came back and spoke to you.
So yes, so Anise came back and she shared with me what her and Maurice had been talking about. And we then just together, we just kind of were just talking and just thinking through what was really on our heart, what we were passionate about. And so the thing that we're really passionate about is the kind of 18 to 30s age group. You know, I particularly feel that it's kind of that time in life where you can have a lot of influence in their lives, and you know, you can help them and coax them along in just making decisions about, you know, university or work or things like that. And that's something that we've really felt, you know, really feel passionate about. But we didn't feel that that was necessarily something that we could do here. Sorry, were you going to jump in?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Was I then about to do your bit?
Yeah.
Sorry. I should keep to the highlighted bits and not...
Don't, yeah. So we were kind of, you know, we know that as in our church here, you know, that 18 to 30 age group is something we've been praying about, isn't it? In terms of, we'd love to see more people in that age group be part of our church. And so really at that stage, we were just feeling like, well, okay, well, maybe, it was, what part have we got to play in that? How do we fit, given that there isn't a large group of those people in our church at the moment, but that's really where we're feeling stirred. Just how does that fit? Now, and if you remember at that time, we were coming to the end of 2015 and we were kind of looking forward to our new vision kind of coming in 2016. And so we were sort of thinking, well, maybe, you know, once that comes in, maybe it's just that we feel we need just something to get our teeth into. And didn't we?
Yeah.
Yes. So we were feeling that, but then I think also we're starting to have those conversations of, but maybe, well, maybe a moving, yeah, maybe God is moving us, but really no more than just, you know, we just float the idea, and so at the same time you were looking ahead.
So at the same time I was looking ahead. Thank you for that prompting. And Tim says. Now, I was looking ahead and thinking, well, last year I turned 40.
No.
I know. To look at me, I look only 25. I turned 40, and I just felt that I didn't want to be a boring 40-year-old. And at the time, I just felt God was saying that he wanted to take us as a family on an adventure. Well, don't drop your notes. You won't know where we're up to.
Yeah, and at the same time.
And at the same time.
I was...
And at the same time, Annalise.
I was asked to give part of my testimony here at ACC. And just for various reasons, I didn't feel that I should do that. But really through that, actually, I really felt God speak to me about how my testimony wasn't for here, that he's got other plans for my testimony. And so we then go to January 2016 and... New vision was articulated and we were really excited to kind of hear what it was, and we felt really flat. And it's terrible because it's not a bad vision at all, it's a really good vision, but it didn't do the thing in our hearts that we were expecting it to do. And I think we kind of recognized that maybe, you know, sometimes you have that feeling where you just start to feel unsettled. But it's not because anything is wrong where you are, it's just that God's got something different for you. And so we then really seriously started to pray about the idea of moving and just started to throw a few ideas around. So we were thinking, we know Tom in Ipswich. Yeah, maybe Ipswich would be a good place to move to. A relational mission church plant in Colchester, maybe that would be quite exciting. But started to just to pray about it. And then I had one of those suddenly moments. Have you ever had those? Where God just kind of breaks in and does something. So in February last year, I was cooking tea in my kitchen. And most of you will be aware that as part of Relational Mission, we hold our regular enough half nights of prayer. And as part of those, pioneering situations do little videos and then you send postcards to encourage them. Now, because I work for Relational Mission, I get a little preview of what those videos are. And so I was in my kitchen checking my work email, and the videos for the next Enough Night had come through. So I thought, oh, I'll watch them to see what they're like. Is it?
Hello, Matthew.
Oh, hello, Matthew.
I'll send him a message and say we all want to talk to him now.
Okay. And so the first one that I watched was the one from Revelation Church in Camden. And so Steph, the guy who leads it, was kind of talking about their vision to plant an expression of Christianity postcode by postcode across North London. And I thought, wow, that sounds really exciting. And then, right at the end, he says, if you're over 40, you'd be really, really well cared for in our church. So their church is probably, 80%, more than that, kind of under the age of 30. And in that instant, I was still cooking tea, and I was in floods and floods of tears, completely overcome with emotion. I felt God say that you need to move, and suddenly all of Morris's kind of conversation came back to me. So I turned 40 next year, in 2018, and I can't describe it in any other way to you other than I knew in that instant, just completely overcome with emotion, what God was saying to me, and I was so cross. I was so cross and so upset. So I'm still cooking tea in my kitchen, and I was saying to God, this is impossible. This is impossible. You haven't answered any of my prayers in the last 2 years. That's how I felt. I have no faith that you're going to move us to London. We can't afford it. It's impossible. Tim is never going to want to move to London. That would be the last place he would want to move to. Our kids, what about our kids? They're not going to want to move to London. This is impossible. I used to live in London about 20 years ago, and I haven't got pleasant memories of when I left, actually. It was quite difficult. And so it was another thing on my list to God. Actually, I don't want to go back and face, you know, just some things that weren't that great at the time. Issues around Esther and Eli's dad, actually, that could be really difficult. Another one of my, you know, I was just there in the kitchen going, and this and this and this. This is impossible, God. But I couldn't deny what I knew God had said to me, so that left me in a really difficult position, because that's quite a horrible feeling to know that you can't make something happen yourself, but to have no faith that God can do it is not a pleasant place to be at all. So I told Tim that I knew where God was calling us to, but I wasn't going to tell him. There is some wisdom in it, I think. So I knew. I knew that, so Tim would do anything for me, and I knew that if I wanted to push this through, then I could. But that when we moved, and when it was hard, because it will be hard, because it always is when you move and do something new, actually, if Tim hadn't heard himself independently, we would just open ourselves up to loads of resentment and, you know, bitterness between us. And so I said, you need to pray about it and hear from God yourself, and we're not going to talk about it until you do.
So, after hearing that, I went away and I prayed. And the first time I prayed, God said London. And for me, London is the last place in the world that I would want to move. I've lived in Norfolk for 40 years. It's a lovely place. Yeah. Moving into a city is, yeah, the last thing I'd want to do. But every time I asked God where he wanted to move us to, he said London. And this went on for a couple of months.
Felt like an eternity.
I'm the kind of guy that just needs to be sure to be, you know, need to know, yeah, this is definitely it. So it's kind of, yeah, you're sure, God? Is this definitely it? It all came to a head because then a niece came to me and said, 2 months later, look, I need your permission to do something. I need your permission to just speak to one other person just so I can talk out what's in my head, which I took as the final sign of saying, right, you need to tell a niece that you know. So I then sat down and said, you don't need to do that because I know where God's calling us to move to. Pause. And I said, it's London. To which Anise then burst into tears. I then panicked inside going, oh no, it's the wrong place. I haven't said, no, it was Cambridge. It was Cambridge. Oh, no. but then after Anise had kind of composed herself. Then just Anise just then just it was just the fact that it was the realization that it was real, it was happening, God had called us, because there is no way on earth I would have said, we're going to move to London unless God had said so. And yeah, it then just for you, it was just then that whole thing of, well, this is just impossible. For me, it had the reverse effect. I'm the kind of guy who likes to have all my ducks in a row and know exactly how I'm going to get there. I was really excited. And am I jumping the gun? No, I was so excited. You know, I was really excited. I even used the line of, this is as exciting as when we got married and when Jemima was born. That's how excited I was. And, people who know me know that that's not normal. It's normally the reverse, but in this instance, it wasn't. But anyway, I went off the topic.
That's right. Yeah, so we had a choice, didn't we, in that moment, to whether to be obedient to what we felt God was saying or whether to be disobedient. So we opted for, okay, God, if this is really what you're saying, we'll start to just, take those steps and be obedient. And I don't know how it's going to happen or anything, but we then shared it with James and Penny and prayed about it together and had that sense. We were praying together just about how it was like, a lamp unto my feet. And so actually that God would really reveal like the next bit. You know, when you hold a lamp unto your feet, you can only see that bit in front of your feet, can't you? And so we wouldn't know kind of the whole plan, but just the next bit. We got back in touch with Morris and his wife Rachel, met up with them, just kind of talked it through. And Morris, it was a bit like talking to your dad, wasn't it? It was a bit like, because Morris was like, are you sure? You know, it's a really different church. It's a really different sort of church. But
he just did that.
It was good. It was
pushing
he was just kind of prodding us just to really make sure that what we thought we felt was what we felt. And so they advised us to start to drip feed the idea of going on an adventure with God with our children, because we weren't sure when to discuss that with them or when to sort of for them to be part of the journey as well. And also just to gather some prophetic data. So Morris was saying, you know how God's spoken to you, but actually you need a story, because when you start to share it with other people, there needs to be weight to it. And so that was really helpful. Now, all this time, I'm still feeling this. I haven't changed how I feel up until, all this time. So when we spoke to Morris and Rachel, I was still feeling rubbish about the whole thing. And, that it was impossible. And then we had a Relational Mission Leadership Conference last May, and a friend of mine who I was in London with 15, 20 years ago, who now lives in New Zealand, was back in the country, and she came for one of the days, and so we had a really good day together. But she said, I really feel, Anise, that God sent me here today to remind you about what was good about London, which was just, God's kindness, really. Really, really kind of him to do that. And now this is your bit.
So in July last year, we arranged to meet up with Steph Liston and his wife Davina. So we met up with them, and it was really just to find out what the vision of the church was about the whole postcode by postcode thing, and just to get to know their story and how they ended up at Revelation Church. We then, after that, we did a bit of walking around the streets of London and just prayer walking in the north of London, which again I was excited about and felt really. We got back to our hotel room and Anise sat on the bed and burst into tears and said, this was my birthday weekend, by the way. She said, I've ruined your birthday. And I said, well, no, this is when I made the comment about the whole being as exciting as getting married. I was really excited. You weren't so excited. But it's your turn now.
So then in August, we went to London for the weekend with our kids, and so Steph and Davina were on holiday, and they just said to us, look, if you want to come and stay in our house just to have a week, weekend, then you can do that. So again, we hadn't told the children about our plans or anything. We just kind of sold it as a little mini break in London, which it was. We did loads of fun stuff on the Saturday, And then we went along to Revelation Church on the Sunday. And I mean, we'd never been before either. So we kind of went in and, you know, the service had was starting. And I was standing there, you know, during the worship, and I was just looking around thinking, man, God, you're saying this is going to be our church family, but this is impossible. Like, this is absolutely impossible. So that was all that I was thinking. And then there was a lady there who came up to us, and they kind of, during the communion, she said, oh, you need to take communion with us. And so we did. And she said to me, God told me when I woke up this morning that there was going to be someone here who had a head full of decisions. And I think that's you. Have you got a lot of decisions to make? Now, we'd gone not wanting to share, you know, what we were thinking. Obviously, only a very small amount of people knew what, you know, what we'd felt at that stage. So I was really cagey. I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, some decisions. Like, not wanting to give anything away at all. And then she was like, right, let me pray for you. And then as she was praying, she said, right, Anise, God really wants me to tell you that he's going to answer the impossible. And I honestly, again, just God's kindness the whole way through this story has been incredible, because all I was standing there thinking was, this is impossible, you know, just that line. And so, yeah, for her to say with, you know, no knowledge of us or our situation at that stage, you know, God wants you to know he's going to answer the impossible. Now, that doesn't make anything less impossible, but my focus was different. So I think I'd been so focused on myself and what I couldn't do, I just lost track of who God is and what he can do. So I felt completely different. I was excited.
Yay.
Yeah. I didn't cry.
I was still excited.
So kind of following that, we knew that we, kind of in that then coming term, that we had lots of conversations that we needed to have. And Morris's words just about, you know, gathering some prophetic data, I suppose, came back to us, and we prayed about that. And then one of the events that I helped to run is something called Prayer and Equipping that takes place a few times a year, and we had one in September. And on the first day, there was a thing about church planting, and actually Peter and Anne came over and prayed for me about it. But Anne had a prophetic word about it being sooner than I think. So I'll come back to that. That'll be important later, so don't forget that, okay? And then on the second day, Tim was able to come. He's never been to one before and hasn't been to one since, but it just so happened on that day he was able to come. And so there was kind of worship and, you know, ministry stuff kind of going on. And we felt a hand on our shoulder, didn't we? And just somebody praying in tongues behind us. And then the guy said, oh, actually, I think God's given me a picture for you. Is it all right if I share it? And we're like, yeah, of course. And so we said, okay. So he said, there's a picture of a crossroads. And at one end of the crossroads, it's a really rural area. So there's trees and fields. There's a cow on the corner. And at the other end of the crossroads, there's skyscrapers. And I feel like God's saying to you, it's time to take your gifts to the city. Uh-huh. Okay. And then he said, in the picture, the path to the city isn't clear, it's covered. But God's saying, don't worry about that, because he will make the way clear. Does that mean anything to you? We were very British. She went, oh, yeah, thank you very much. So we were kind of blown away by that, actually, weren't we? You know, just how specific that felt and the confirmation of everything we'd been feeling up to that point. Yeah. Oh, yeah, still me, sorry.
It's still you.
Okay, so just another thing that happened kind of after that was during the Adrian Horner weekend, which was in October. There were a number of different prophetic words from that weekend, but actually one that stands out and that has kind of come to be quite relevant. So Simon, you had a picture of a Cluedo board, and just how in Cluedo you roll the dice, you know, you get a two. I was like, oh, it takes ages to get into the room that you need to get to, but that God was going to give us some secret passage moments. So on the Cluedo board, there's secret passages where you can jump, like from the garage to the kitchen in one move, and that I'd be saying, oh, how did I get here so quickly? And it would go against all my strategic planning. I like to have everything, you know, planned out.
Okay, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so as Anise said, we had a lot of conversations to have. So we felt it, kind of in the October, December last year, we spoke to the elders and shared our story with them. We shared our story with our parents and just told them, which went down well. and we also shared with like our close friends. Also, back end of last year, Eli was having this recurring dream where he was standing in the playground of a school, and he had a circle of people around of other children around him that had different coloured skin, and he was teaching them how to play this game that they play at school called Kings. We hadn't said anything, obviously, to them, but it was just the beginning of how God was starting to speak to Eli about, because we'd been drip feeding them all about, you know, going on an adventure with God, God calling you to do things, and it was just God starting to just really work in his life and just reveal things to him, which was just amazing. There's much more that we can say about that God's been doing in our kids' lives. But anyway, we'll skip on to the next bit.
Okay, so we then, nothing much seemed to happen for a little while. We were kind of thinking 2018, that's quite a long way away. So plenty of time to pray for God's provision, because, you know, we still can't afford it to move to London. It's still crazy. And then we had our Together in North Norfolk weekend. And on the Saturday, I had a real wobble. I just felt suddenly so overwhelmed by the enormity of what we were leading our family into. And just that very human, I can't do this. And I can't make it happen. And I felt really, really upset about it. And then we got home that evening, all bundled through the door, and there was a typed note on our mat. And it said, we know your house isn't up for sale, but if you were thinking of moving, we'd love to buy it. We think that it's our dream home. We've grown up in the area, and we're looking for a forever home for our family. You know, if you're not considering it, sorry to have bothered you, but thanks for reading the note. Signed, Brad and Emma. And then their phone numbers. Oh, we thought, that's a bit strange. And so we all kind of stood there and just read this note. And then Jemima said, oh, that means we can move to London.
She didn't know.
No idea where that came from. We were like, oh, yeah, okay. And so we thought, oh, it must be a scam. You know how you do. But then we were like, well, what's
you
this?
Thought.
Well, because who does that? Who puts a note through the door? And I texted a few people, you know, have you had a note through your door? No. Oh, okay. That's a bit strange. And then a couple of weeks went by because I was too scared to phone them. And and then I was like, okay, now I can do this. I can phone and just be casual. Because bearing in mind, to a potential buyer, saying that you can't afford to move to where you know you've got to move to isn't really a good thing to say. So I was aware that we couldn't really say a lot about our story. Anyway, at the same time, we were thinking, well, it's, you know, is this kind of just God's kind of hand, you know, putting this thing through the door? And so anyway, I phoned and I thought, I know, I'll phone their house number because they're bound to be out of work and then I can just leave a message and don't have to speak to them. But the lady answered on two rings, so I had this very bizarre conversation with her. And to cut a long story short, we agreed that they would come round and look at our house with no obligation from either party, you know, just to kind of see. So our house has never been so tidy. Never will be again. And they came round, kind of showed them around the house. They really, really liked it. Their position was that they'd got a buyer for their house already. And so we were just very honest and said, look, really don't think our timescale's going to work. We're looking to move, you know, in 2018. So I'm not sure that's going to work at all. And we told them that our kind of it would fit in with where our children's education was to move in 2018. And so then Brad said, well, would you consider renting your house off us if we bought it from you now? What? And we were like, really thrown, not sure about that at all. And they kind of went, we agreed to stay in touch. And we were a little bit, just a bit thrown, weren't we? Because it didn't seem like that would really fit, just because of kind of that money situation and paying, you know, higher on rent than on our mortgage and all those kinds of things. We were just thinking, oh, I just don't really know how that fits at all. Now, oh, it's you now.
It's me now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, in April last year.
This year, sorry.
Jumping back in time, we felt that it was time to we ought to tell the kids. So we'd been drip feeding them the whole thing about what he'd done that. So we told the kids. To which Jemima's reply was, "Can I take my wardrobe? And can I take my DVDs and my teddies? Okay, can I have a hot chocolate?" And that was her whole thing. Esther and Eli, we talked to them, and they were excited, but there was also that side of, but I'm going to be leaving my friends, I'm going to be leaving my clubs. So it was the kind of the what we were expecting, really. But yeah, it was still a positive conversation.
Yeah, they were blown away by the story. I think couldn't deny what God had been saying. Okay, so also kind of within this time. Vicky had given me a picture about, I don't know how many of you have seen the Indiana Jones films, but there's a bit in one of them where he comes to the leap of faith, where there's just a sheer drop in front of him and he can't get to the other side. And he has to take that step out. And as he does that, one bit of the bridge appears, you know, underneath him. And so she just kind of was saying everything in you wants to throw sand out across the bridge to be able to see, you know, what's coming. But actually, it's as you step out in faith that God will meet you in that. Okay, so also at this time, we'd been trying to book a holiday with the Taylor family. And we've been trying for a couple of months to book a holiday, just to France, a villa, nothing, you know, quite a reasonable budget between the two families, just somewhere that would fit us, not a huge criteria. And we hadn't been able to. So either places had been too expensive, our dates weren't available, then one that we thought was suitable then got retracted the next day, and it just wasn't working. And so the day after Brad and Emma had come round to look at our house, I then made a bit of a flippant comment to Penny and just said, oh, it's just like something's conspiring against us. I've never known such trouble trying to book a holiday. Maybe there's another way of looking at this. And I didn't really know what I meant. I hadn't really developed the thought, but just kind of said it quite flippantly. And later that day, I got a text from Penny telling me to come round and see her. because she had some things that she thought she needed to say about London. So I went round and she said, I don't really want to say this, but I think there's something that we need to consider. So at the moment, we're looking at everything through the lens of you moving in 2018. And suddenly there are some things that maybe just are not quite starting to fit. So she said, I think we need to consider taking out that lens and putting in the lens of you moving in 2017. What? It's like, you've got to be kidding. So she then explained herself. So she said, suddenly, Brad and Emma, that time scale, if we move this year, that time scale fits. Okay. She reminded me of what Anne had said at Prayer and Equipping about it's sooner than you think. And then, obviously, I then remembered, like, you know, Simon's thing about those secret passage moments when you suddenly think, how did I get here so quickly? There was also the thing about schools. And so Penny then started to say that actually she'd been thinking that for Eli, it was much better for him to move in year six and have a group of friends to then go up to high school with, rather than making that move at the same time he starts high school in a new area. And from a very practical point of view, you have to, so I would have to apply for Eli to, for a high school for him in October, and you can only apply where you've got an address. And so we'd have to apply for him to be here and then make the transfer once we'd moved, and then there's no guarantee of a place for him at a high school, you know, and that, just that could be really complicated. Whereas schools would know now if they had, a year six place, because it's not a transition year. And also, I'd noticed the day before, actually, when I'd been looking on the internet at some things, that in that area of London, they don't do separate infant and junior schools. It's all one, so they run from 4 through to 11. So I'd been thinking Jemima would be changing schools, because here, she would be. She'd be going from St Michael's to Bure Valley. But actually, in 2018, but actually, if they run from 4 to 11, there's no school change, whether she's starting year 2 or year 3. It's just running straight through. So then Penny said, what's the issue? The issue is the same if you move this year or next year. So the issues are the emotional cost of leaving. That doesn't change whether that's now or next year. That's still going to be really, really painful and hard. And the other issue is we can't afford to move. But that doesn't change this year or next year, you know. So we prayed about it, and we prayed that actually by the end of the Easter holidays we'd know one way or the other whether to move in 2017 or 2018. Because to have to phone someone back and say, we'll sell you our house, knowing that you've got nowhere to move to, is really, really frightening. So we needed to feel that real conviction in our spirits that God was leading us in this way. So, is it still me? It is, sorry.
You did take a big bit.
I've got a lot to say. So, 2 days later, I phoned Brad and Emma back and spoke to Brad. And so I was about to say to him that we were reconsidering our timescale. But he said, Anise, before you speak, actually, there's something that I need to say to you. Emma and I have been talking, and there's something we feel so strongly we need to tell you. Whether or not you sell us our house, it doesn't matter, but we really, really need to tell you this. Okay, what? And he said, well, we're both teachers. And he said, well, I deal with a lot of transition. Excuse me. So he said, I have to say to you, it's far better for you to move, for your son to move in year six, rather than in a high school year. And then he said, I'm not lying, word for word, what Penny had said to me 2 days earlier. Okay. So really just felt, okay, God, maybe you might be trying to say something through this. So I said to Brad that could he give us a couple of weeks just to see if some things would fall into place, or, you know, money would drop from the sky or something, to see if we could move this year or not. And so we agreed we'd be back in touch by the end of the Easter holidays. And then we went on holiday with my mum and dad for a week to Staffordshire. And on the way back, I was just praying in the car that, you know, you just do those really silly prayers. So I just said, okay, God, when we get back, I want there to be something through our letterbox that tips me 2017 or 2018. That was my prayer. And so we got back, nothing through the letterbox. I felt a little disappointed, but also thought it was a bit of a daft, quite specific prayer, so never mind. So we'd unpack the car, I was in the kitchen just unloading some stuff, and then our letterbox went. And there was something on the mat. So it was a card. So I went to open the card, and it was from Anne. And she said, oh, just there's something that I've been wanting to say, but I wasn't sure whether to say it, but now I feel that I should say it. Something that God really said to me, spoke to me when you told me about Brad and Emma a few weeks previously. But it was a bit directional, so I wasn't sure whether to tell you. But anyway, I'll just tell you, and then you can decide. You know, it's all a bit like that. Okay. And so the and then at the bottom, she'd just written kind of in big letters, it's sooner than you think. Aha. And then when I spoke to Anne about it, she said, well, the funny thing is, I was about to text it to you, and then I felt God say, no, don't text it. You need to put it in a card. And she was a bit annoyed, because that meant she had to go and buy a card. So she was. So she went and, you know, got a card. Yeah, and so it was just that thing of my really daft, very specific prayer. You know, okay, God, I want something through the letterbox to tell me whether it's this year or next year. And then for her to have almost been a bit annoyed that she had to go and get a card, you know, and specifically put it through the letterbox. I knew that we had to change our timescale and move this year. Just really fright.
It's funny when you pray things, isn't it? it's a theme throughout the thing. When we've prayed something, it's happened how we've prayed it, which is great. Right, so the next bit. We then call a group of close friends round to pray specifically for what was next, because having had the timescale change from 2018 to 2017, it kind of made things a bit more, there was a lot more to kind of do. So we had, I don't know how many people, but came round, we prayed, and there was kind of the things about, you know, having conversations with Brad and Emma, having conversations with Esther and Eli's dad, having conversations with Steph, because he was thinking we were going 2018, now it's changing to 2017. And out of that prayer time came a couple of really key prophetic words, which my wife will now explain. Sorry, was that cheesy?
Yeah.
Sorry. I said I wouldn't be cheesy.
So there was... Jen kind of had a picture of, or just that sense of being carried along in a momentum. So actually we haven't engineered or gone looking for a lot of what's happened. It's almost like it's all been happening and we've been kind of being carried along with it. And off the back of that, Anne had this picture of a canal and a lock. And how when you kind of get into a lock and it shuts behind you, so you can't go back, but you also can't go forwards until the water's risen, but you can't do anything to make that water rise. You just have to wait. It's really annoying having to wait. And so that sense of when you're in the lock, you can't go out, you can't see what's ahead until the water's risen, and then you can see what's ahead. And actually that we were in a bit of a lock moment. So we were well and truly in the lock, so we couldn't go back. You know, this is what God was saying to us. But equally, we couldn't quite see what was ahead. But it wasn't our job to make that water rise. That was that question of waiting. And that was God's job. Now, the other thing was... I just have to read this one. So I felt God speak to me through Isaiah 35, which I'll explain in a few minutes. But kind of out of that, Peter had a thing where he felt God say the word saffron to him. And in the beginning of Isaiah 35, it kind of talks about where, so you've got what was a wilderness and a desert, and it is now an abundant blossom of crocus from which saffron comes. God's taken something from somewhere else and made it fertile, and now it says it will blossom abundantly. There's an awesome provision from God.
So the funny thing about those two prophetic words is the actual imagery in it. Camden is famous for its lock and canal, and it's also famous, which is, I knew about the lock but I didn't know this one, it's also famous for it was famous for growing saffron, which, you know, that kind of, yeah, it was quite cool. So we really felt that was kind of God narrowing down where we were to move to in London. Because North London is big and there's a lot of places. Might have wanted to leave, go and move to near the Arsenal Stadium or not. But yeah, so we felt that was just God really narrowing down where he wanted us to be. Is it you now?
No,
it's not. It's me still. So yeah, the borough of Camden. Just to give you an idea of the difference in house prices in between Elsham and Camden. A house of R that we have in Elsham, which is a modest three with a loft room. Anyway, it doesn't matter, going into too much detail. A house like ours in Camden would be £1 million. So that's quite a lot of money. I haven't, yeah. But so yeah, that kind of gives you an idea of kind of the impossibility of this and the fact that we can't afford it. So the next thing we did was to start the conversation. So I then phoned Brad and Emma back, and I spoke to Brad, and he was kind of, I just explained to him that yes, a move in 2017 would be possible. To which he replied, well, our circumstances have changed slightly. The guy that wants to buy our house, he was going to be renting his house out rather than selling. He's now going to sell his house, so it kind of moves the time scale along a bit. Have I got that right?
Yeah
that is right. So that was kind of like, oh, okay, right. Next bit.
So
he said, can you give me a bit a day just to speak to Emma and just talk things through? Because that's great what you've just told us, but I just need to talk with Emma.
And then Brad phoned.
Oh, yeah. And then Brad phoned back. Oh, yeah, there isn't a separate bit, is there? It's just all one bit. So then Brad rang back, and we didn't hear the phone, so he left a message. And he said that he had been offered a job in Pouring Land, a school in Pouring Land, which was like this once-in-a-lifetime job. So that meant living in Elsham and travelling to Pouring Land would be not a possible option. So they were basically wouldn't be buying our house. They were really upset about it. You know, they really felt that they'd put a lot of effort into moving to Elsham, but then to have this job offered, it was kind of like that thing of can't really turn it down. So that was kind of the end of
Brad and Emma.
The lovely people. Well, the thing is, when we had the prayer time together, we'd really felt and really kind of battled in prayer for them in kind of, yeah, they're moving into our house and them becoming Christians and joining the church and all of this, getting really excited about it. But actually, it's kind of... Am I jumping into your bit?
I don't know.
It was really God kind of, again, focusing us on, well, if Brad and Emma hadn't come along and we'd actually looked through the lens of 2017 rather than 2018, we wouldn't have got to the point of, well, actually, we need to move in 2017. So, you know, from what Penny had said about Eli and how he should move up into school, and then that being confirmed by Brad, was just, it all kind of turned our gaze from looking at this longer picture of we've got a hole till 2018 to actually 2017. You're next.
We were gutted.
It was really
disappointing to feel like we were kind of, to use Morris's green light things, feel like we were green lighting. And it was like, what do you mean they don't want the house? This is ridiculous. And so we did have a weekend of just feeling really, you know, really gutted. And, oh, God, what are you doing? And I think, yeah, we could see, you know, often, actually, how God gets your attention is just to signpost you rather than it being the actual thing. But that's really difficult at times. And so I kind of came to church on the Sunday morning, feeling really gutted. And then Natalie came up to me, if you remember, and she's like, oh, I've been holding on to this, like, word for you for the last few weeks, just been meaning to say it to you. And she said, so I don't know if you've ever seen Indiana Jones. And I was like, I know what you're going to say. And she gave me the exact same picture that Vicky had given me, those few weeks earlier. So I think, yeah, encouraging for you guys that, yeah, how God speaks. But actually, just that sense of God saying, I've got you. So what we might have felt like we were falling a little bit at that point because it hadn't worked out how we thought. But actually, God's saying, no, I've got you. Actually, as you step out, I'm going to meet you in it. And God had really spoken to me about that earlier on as well. Just when I was going through my divorce, my dad made me a promise that he wouldn't let me fall. And God had really reminded me of that, that actually, you know, I've got a great dad, but my father in heaven is so much better than my earthly father. And so just as my dad promised that he wouldn't let me fall, really felt God speak to me through that he wasn't going to let us fall. So... yeah, Natalie's held on to that word for a few weeks, but actually, from my point of view, that timing was perfect to hear that Sunday morning. Also, a few more things. We're nearly done. So, my mum and dad had been praying about it, and they'd felt God speak to them about how we wouldn't have less than we have now and that we wouldn't be in debt. So, you know, all these things, obviously, you kind of pray into them. But that was another thing that we were encouraged by and just to pray into. And I had this phrase just going kind of after we'd met to pray and just over those sort of that next couple of weeks, just this phrase, a purse full of prophetic promises. And actually, how, you know, we haven't got a purse full of cash that, you know, £1 million. Who does? That we can go and buy a house with. But we've got a purse full of prophetic promises. And actually, you know, God gives us these things so that we can stand on them and walk in his purposes for us. And so that's been something we've kind of held on to and prayed, haven't we, throughout. Now, also at this time, Eli had another dream. And so he had a dream about a house. And he drew it for us and then described it. So it was a house with two pillars of like little fancy bits, and a sort of door in the middle, some brickwork above the door, a square house, three windows. And then it had a rectangle bit coming out the back and another little rectangle bit on the back of that. Excuse me. And the bricks were a sandy yellow colour on the house. So, you know, we were like, well, that's great. Well, it might mean something, it might not, you know. Trying to really encourage Eli sort of in just, yeah, speaking out these things when he feels like he's got something like that, but holding it lightly. And so the next day, I looked on Rightmove, because we've done a lot of looking on Rightmove at all these houses that, you know, has ridiculous amounts of money. And there was a house matching the description of what Eli had drawn for £1.6 million. Now, you have to understand, we know how bonkers this is, and you have to understand that is just the price of living in that area. For these prices, they're not mansions. They're just kind of normal-sized houses, or maybe slightly bigger than our house, you know, for another room or a bigger space downstairs. And it's difficult, isn't it? It's because it's an extortionate amount of money. And we've really wrestled with that over, you know, as we've been praying about it. So we looked at this house and we were like, oh, that's a bit odd, because that's just come up today and that matches the description. Might be something, might be nothing. So we knew we were going to London the following week, and so we thought, oh, we don't lose anything by booking a viewing, do we? So we might as well do that, you know, as you do. So we arranged for that viewing. So we've had our first conversation with Brad and Emma. We've got our third one coming up. We went to London with Steph, and then I met with my ex-husband, with Mark, Esther and Eli's dad. And I was a little bit nervous about telling him that we were moving, but really felt that I needed to honour him and tell him the story. And so we met for coffee, and things haven't been particularly positive between us for a very long time. And I had the best conversation I have had with him in about 10 years, which was an incredible answer to prayer. I can't tell you how that felt. And everything that we'd prayed, that kind of he would feel, he would say, he said. And just so he was really supportive. You know, what a great adventure for us as a family. God's really calling you, great opportunity for the kids. And really flexible about how kind of the contact works going forward, which, you know, was a concern. It was amazing, an amazing answer to prayer. Something that, you remember my impossible list? So, yeah, that was like a tick. Not so impossible, God. That's great.
So that was conversation number two. So conversation number three was to have with Steph again. So we went down to London a week after. Had a really good conversation with him. He didn't seem fazed by the fact that the timeline had changed from 2018 to 2017. It was really valuable because he kind of gave us some good ideas on for my business to move from rural Elsham to the big city of London. He had some good tips on how to do that. Subsequently, I've got to go and put a quote together for a month's work in London in July, which got to sort that one out anyway. So that was a great conversation. We then went to the viewing of the house. We turned up, stood outside the house, looked lovely. Then another couple walked up and said, I guess you're here for the same reason we're here for. It was two viewings at the same time.
They looked like they could afford
it. They looked like they could afford it. But yeah, they looked like they could afford it. I don't know whether we did. I was in shorts. So two estate agents turned up. One seemed very serious and very straight-laced, and I was hoping that we wouldn't get him, and we didn't. The other guy was really friendly and really nice, and we just went around the house, and we were just talking about the prospect of, you know, what you could do with this and what you could do with that, because it was a bit of a doer-upper.
It was Tim's dream.
It was great. I'd have loved it. We then ended up in the garden, and we had the strange but great opportunity of actually sharing our story with the estate agent. We said that we were Christians, and he went, oh, well, yeah, I'm a Christian. I don't go to church, but I'm a Christian.
He said, I'm the sort of Christian that will go down there rather than up there. I was like, what, not Christian?
Not then. So, yeah, we had a great conversation. We just told him the whole story, and he was visibly gobsmacked. And just, you know, just explaining how we'd got to where... Because he asked the question, most families are moving out of London, not moving into London. So why? So we told him the story. And we then told him about Eli's dream about the house, and that the house we'd just gone round was the house that Eli dreamt about. And he was going, well, if it was up to me, I'd give you the house. I was saying, can you? it was amazing, wasn't it? It was, you know, just to go around. So, where are we up to? It was an unattainable house unless God intervened. You know, there would be no way we could have raised £1.6 million. When we were there, we felt that the area was right. In terms of location from church, where Stefan Davina lived, just various surrounding schools around there. We felt it was the right area, right in the middle of the borough of Camden. When we came back, I felt that we needed to commit a period of time praying for this house. I felt that God had said 7 days. So we began this 7 days of praying specifically that this house would be the house that we would have, which at the beginning seemed really weird and seemed, you know, this is just, how can we be just praying for a 1.6 million house? It just seems completely unearned. We don't deserve it and things like that. But kind of the thing that kind of clinched it was we had then had an email saying from the estate agents saying that all offers on the house had to be in by that Friday. Now, our 7 days of prayer started on the Sunday, so that would have meant we wouldn't have reached our 7 days. So I was a bit confused about that and thinking, well, God, you said clearly, I believe you clearly said 7 days, but yet they're saying that the all offers are going to be in by that Friday. 2 hours later, we get another email from the estate agents saying all offers have to be in the following Tuesday. So that then meant that our 7 days of prayer would finish on the Saturday, and then all our offers would have to be in by the following Tuesday.
Yep.
Is that you now?
Yeah.
Yeah, go.
Now, I think what we've learned is you have to kind of hold all these things together in your head at the same time. So even though you know what is probable, you still have to pray what is possible, if you know what I mean. So it is probable that we will not get that house. But it is possible that God can give us the house. Do you see what I mean? So you kind of have to hold the two things together. And you know, we kind of felt during our 7 days of praying, actually, if you're going to go all in and pray for something, you know, like we've been doing on the Wednesday prayer things, praying boldly, specifically, persistently, there's no point praying hedge your bets kind of prayers. You know, you just have to go all in with it. And so that's, you know, that's what we've done, and that's what we did. Now, at the end of the 7 days, there was a Relational Mission London Day. So this was just last weekend. And me and Esther went to that. So we'd, for her birthday, we'd bought her a concert ticket to go and see the Vamps in concert at the O2. And then it transpired that the London Day was also on the same day. So it was possible for us to go to that. And it was for people who were, you know, interested in moving to London or just exploring that idea. So me and Esther went. And before we went to, like, into the pub where we were meeting for this thing, I took her to show her the outside of this house. And we prayer walked together, actually, up and down the road and kind of round. NW5 is the postcode, sort of around NW5. It was quite funny because we were praying. I was so proud of her. We were kind of praying together, you know, walking along. And then people would walk past and she'd go, really silent, and then kind of carry on as they went past. Now, at the London Day, there were some people from Revelation Church there and some other people there, and then we had to, you know, pray for each other during the day. And so in that context, a girl came up to me and said, I've got a spare house. Yeah, if you're interested. Okay. So I was a bit, I'm not very good in those situations. I'm just a bit taken aback. So I was a little bit like, you know. And so she said her and her dad kind of jointly own this house in Camden. And they've got tenants in it at the moment. The tenants are leaving, but it's also on the market. But she was sure that we could probably live rent-free in it for a year. Okay. So I kind of took her number and her email address and said I'd be in touch. And because it's up for sale at the moment, I had to look on Rightmove. And I didn't like it. I'm just being really honest with you now about my... So we thought, you were an epic weekend, weren't you? So I had to phone to him really late and kind of... So it had a really, really small downstairs. It's just like one room and then like a little kitchen, and then it had there were four rooms upstairs, but one didn't have a window in it, and so you can't really have a child in a bedroom without a window, and so that meant two of our kids have had to share. And so you know how you're just wrestling with all these things because you're kind of thinking, well, it's not like we're flush with choices, you know, and we can just go and pick any house we want. We're at the mercy of God's provision. But then the other side of me was thinking, I genuinely can't see how five of us can live in this house and not hate it. It was also surrounded by a building site, and I was thinking, oh, my cat's going to get killed on a building site. It's terrible. And I felt like an ungrateful child, because what do you do? I've never felt disappointed with God's provision before. And I just spent a couple of days feeling really, like, it's a really horrible feeling. You know, well, God, if this, really? That's sort of what I felt was, really? We've prayed all this time, and really? Okay, but, you know, okay, God, well, but if this is what you're saying, we're prepared to make it work, because you do, don't you? You just, okay, you know, we'll submit to God's sovereignty in it, and trust that somehow he knows best, although it didn't seem like it. And so... a couple of days later, we then gathered a group of friends around to pray again. Quite specifically this time about kind of house and jobs and schools. And I think it was Jen, actually, who just prayed, you know, if this house in Rochester Mews isn't the right thing, the door would, it wouldn't just kind of shut, it would, you know, be slammed shut. And I was thinking, yes, Lord. And it was funny, I'm reading through Isaiah at the moment, and in the bit I'd read during that morning, there's a line in it, it's Isaiah 48:49, and it says something like, this place isn't big enough for us, give us more space. That's what it says in the van. I was like, yes, that's right, you know. Now also, coupled with this, so something we really feel is that actually we're to really open our home to people when we move. That we've really felt God speak to us about that. So again, this didn't feel like an easy place to be able to do that. Anyway, so all our friends, you know, kind of left after they'd prayed on Tuesday evening. 5 minutes after they left, I got an email from this girl who'd offered us this house saying, I'm so sorry. On the Sunday, so the day after she'd offered it to me, we discovered that we owed the council an awful lot of money and they'd taken us to court over it. And so we've now got to sell this house immediately to recoup our losses. So we can't, you can't live in it now. I'm really sorry. So I was like, oh my goodness. So it's a really, you know, it's a really weird feeling because I was a bit disappointed that we still don't have anywhere to live. But equally, I think, and also I'd been praying that by the end of May, God would provide us with a house. And I kind of felt a bit like, oh, it's a bit early for God, because it was only halfway through May. God's not normally ahead of time. Okay. And it didn't feel like something that my father would give us, because nothing that we'd prayed about kind of as a family was kind of in this house. And do you understand what I'm saying? Just that wrestling between, well, is that really what God's providing us with? Well, okay. And that, oh, I don't like it. I don't think we can do it. So,
that was a definite no.
That was a definite no. Yes, it felt like a definite no. So, do you want me to do our prayer points, and then we're at the end?
Yes.
Yeah. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Thank you, Tim and Elise. What an amazing story, isn't it? Do you think God's in this? Yeah. And mind you, what Mike Betts has told us apostolically about putting ourselves in a position where if God doesn't show up, we're going to look foolish. So I want to honour Tim and Elise for their faith, their courage, and their obedience in this. Peter was reminding us earlier that our history at Elsham Community Church is sending people to plant churches. James was reminding us earlier, part of our vision as Elsham Community Church is releasing people into all that God has intended for them to be, from neighbourhoods to nations. Just want to remind you about a prophetic word that Marshall bought recently, about a harp. Do you remember that? Harp, Jesus sitting at the harp. The harp is the church. Jesus is tuning up the strings as he plays and as he sings. Part of it says this, speaking of us as the strings. Some of us feel incredibly taut, feeling we couldn't possibly be tuned any higher. We feel under pressure. God says, trust me, I will not snap you. And then Marshall said, there are also some gaps where God is going to bring new strings, new people in. Also, some strings are being tuned up to concert pitch to then be transferred to a new harp. People prepared to be sent out. It's part of our history. It's part of our vision. It's part of our prophetic future. It's another example for us as a church about sowing generously. For us, we could say, oh, we're wanting to see more families come in. This is giving away one of our best. Why would we do that? Because God is in it. Because God is asking us to. We could do so reluctantly. We could do so grudgingly. We could do it with faith and with joy, knowing that when we sow generously, we reap generously. So we're going to pray for this couple. God's storehouses are full. They're full for us as a church here. They're full for Tim and Anise and their family. Okay? So, if you can, thank you for being so patient. I mean, it's just so important for us to hear this story, isn't it? and hear it all and hear how God's speaking and how God has moved. And the story is not finished yet, and we're still got the joy of being part of that. So we're going to pray for Tim and Anise now. If you can stay for a while and do that, then we'd love you to. Please, if you feel you need to get away, please don't feel bad about that at all. No time that has got on. So your prayer points. Thank you.
So we need to pray for a house. That's kind of the major flashing light kind of prayer point. But I just want to, I suppose, just give a bit of context for it. So I was praying a little while ago and felt God say to me that I hadn't asked him for what I wanted. And so I kind of did a little spider diagram with kind of all very practical things in a house, you know, a bedroom for each child, or somewhere for Tim's tools, you know, outside to be stored, or just really practical things like that. And then I felt God tell me to read Isaiah 35, and I'll just read it. So it says, "The desert and parched land will be glad. The wilderness will rejoice and blossom. Like the crocus, it will burst into bloom. It will rejoice greatly and shout for joy. The glory of Lebanon will be given to it, the splendor of Carmel and Sharon. They will see the glory of the Lord, the splendor of our God. Strengthen the feeble hands, steady the knees that give way. Say to those with fearful hearts, be strong, do not fear. Your God will come. He will come with vengeance, with divine retribution. He will come to save you. Then will the eyes of the blind be opened and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then will the lame leap like a deer, then the mute tongue shout for joy. Water will gush forth in the wilderness and streams in the desert. The burning sand will become a pool, the thirsty ground bubbling springs. In the haunts where jackals once lay, grass and reeds and papyrus will grow. And a highway will be there. It will be called the Way of Holiness, and it will be for those who walk on that way." And I read that, and I was really undone by God. I felt such a compassion for the people of London and just all the needs of that city. And I felt God say to me, "Now this is what I want your house to be like." So a place where feeble hands can be strengthened, knees that give way can be steadied, fearful hearts can be strengthened, where the eyes of the blind can be opened, the ears of the deaf unstopped, and the lame, you know, will leap like a deer, and so on. And just, you know, it talks about Lebanon and Carmel and Sharon, and those are fertile places where things grow well. And so it was just that sense of, that's what I want your house to be like. And actually, that's an easier thing to pray than, "God, give me a £1 million house." You know, I think, yeah, just in terms of the prayer points, we just felt like we need to pray for an Isaiah 35 house. So whatever that looks like, but somewhere that those things can be reflected. So that is the main thing. Yeah.